Hello and welcome to the Ramswriter podcast. I'm your host, Simon. I'm back as the season ends, and joining me to discuss everything to Hoppy County, which has been a very busy season. You may have heard his voice before, as he is one of the voices of Pride Park Stadium. Joining me is Chris Holt. Chris, good evening, mate. How are we doing? You all right?
Good evening, Simon. Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this for a while.
Yes, it has. We have obviously been trying to get this sorted for quite a while now, but yeah, NDAs and all that sort of cobblers, it's been a bit difficult. But I thought it'd be nice to bring you on. Obviously, you're obviously a member or staff at the club, and be nice to sort of get a bit of insight to what's sort of been going on. So first of all, Chris, if you just want to introduce yourself, let people like listeners know who you are and everything.
Yeah, so obviously Chris Holt. Been associated with Derby County on and off since the early 90s back at the good old baseball ground. Been a fan for over 40 years. Obviously, you can't tell by my beautiful young looks that I'm that old. But was a steward for many years at the baseball ground, and then left football to go into my other love, which is basketball. And then I was fortunate enough to be asked to come back and join the events team back in 2008, 2009, with wonderful Faye Nixon. And then was on the mic at Pride Park for at least five seasons with the fantastic Matt McGibbon sharing the honours down there on pitch side. And I've been involved with the events team and the marketing team now for the last 10 or 11 seasons, whether I've been seen pitch side with my good old Madonna headset on, as we call them, or whether I've been on the microphone. The last game I did on the mic was the Bielik overhead kick game. So, been there a long time. Ultimately, I'm a massive fan, and it'd be nice to finally say how I feel, what's been happening. Me and you have been good friends for a while now, and through various reasons, I haven't been really able to come on, but I think now's the appropriate time, end of season, and with everything up in the air, let's go for it.
Yeah, definitely. You told me something as well. Every time, was it this season or last season? Every time you're on the mic, we're not lost.
Correct.
And that still runs true, does it? Even the Birmingham game, which I thought I was there, and I thought, curse is going to go here, mate. You've told me now.
Every time I've been on the pitch side, Mike, we've never lost. I was at Rooney's. I was on the mic for Rooney's first game, and I've been obviously pitch side mic covering Matt when he's been off on his golfing trips and what have you. And never lost. I think I've got something like only one draw, which was the Birmingham game. Everything else was a win. And it's quite funny because when the players used to come off, Cocu especially, Philip Cocu realised that every time I was on the mic, they never lost. And he was sort of, I was his lucky charm as such. But yeah.
Surprised it wasn't. Come and get Chris on the mic. I know we'll win. We would have got promoted. if you'd been on the mic, mate.
To be fair, the big shout out to Matt McGibbon. He's an absolute legend, and I love Matt to bits. And we're good friends, and we've got to know each other over the years. And you know, if there's the ultimate master of ceremonies, I've learned a lot from Matt. And hopefully, many years to come, he'll be there cheering the leading the songs and cheering on the boys with everybody on the mic. But I'm always there to stand in for him whenever he needs me.
It's in your DNA, youth.
It's in my DNA, youth. If we need 3 points, Matt, go on holiday.
Brilliant. So we'll get down to it then. Obviously, I was hoping when we do this tonight, we'd sort of know that we'd still have a club next season. Obviously, we've been in administration now since August, September time. How obviously you're a member of staff, you've seen things that us normal fans haven't seen or heard or anything like that. What's it sort of been like around, well, I suppose for you and for your colleagues?
Obviously I'm not full-time. I'm one of the sort of the associate staff. I think the easiest way to describe it is if we go back to when I came on board with the team back in 2009 and when we worked under Tom Glick and those days. In fact, I think when I joined, Clough was in charge. It would be the chap from who bought Hull KR. I'm trying to think of his name now, before the Americans took over. Oh, God. There you go. There's a quiz question.
That's a quiz question.
We were treated with unbelievable respect. Like, I remember the first year, or one of the first years with Nigel. And at the end of the season, all the events staff were asked to come onto the pitch, and we had a group photo with Barks and Sav and Nigel. And we were just made to feel absolutely part of the team.
Yeah, yeah.
And every year, they'd always make us feel like that. You know, the suppliers with kit that we needed. It's a tough job on a match day. You got to remember these guys are there from sort of 10:30, 10:45. In fact, the manager's obviously a lot earlier,
yeah,
all the way through till 6:00, 7:00 in the evening. And in the winter, it can get really cold. Mm. But they always used to provide us with coats and hats and what have you. And as the years went by, after the American era, when I went onto the microphone, and that was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And an experience I'll never forget. Like, I think you've had Richard Cusack on this podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And Rich used to, I was in my little aquarium, as we call it, at the top of the stand next to the police and the security boys. Rich Cusack used to sit to the right side of him. We always used to wave through the glass. But even in those days, we were absolutely looked after. Unbelievable. But as it got further and further into the Mel Morris era, shall we say, we just got treated, in my opinion, worse.
Yeah.
To the extent where we were having to, it just wasn't nice. And the way we were spoken to by certain, let's just say, senior, more including, how can I put this, high senior members of staff.
Yeah.
It was just really bad. And I've worked for two fantastic managers throughout that time. Faye Nixon, who's sadly left now and gone to Pasadena, a wonderful woman, brilliant, passionate Derby fan, incredible at the job. And then she was replaced by Angela Allen, who's since gone as well. She's gone to Project D, I believe. And again, massive loss. You know, those two ladies used to work 70, 80, 90 hours a week and made us feel amazing and just did everything they could. And I just think Derby have made a terrible, terrible mistake allowing staff like that to go. I think they've both gone through their own choice. And it's very sad when two passionate ladies like that, who led us as a team every game and looked after us, you know, it's an honour. It should be an honour to work for the badge. And it is, you know, I'm a massive Derby fan. But it got to the point where, me personally, I was working for them too. I went to match day, and I didn't miss a game in 12 years at home. Yeah. Didn't miss a game. In fact, I can tell you a story. I'll tell you a quick story. Manchester United in the FA Cup, I think it was a Friday, when we got beat 4-1, George Thorne.
Oh, 3-1, wasn't it?
3-1. George Thorne scored, make it 1-1. I was actually in hospital at the time. I just had a real big abscess removed from the side, and I absconded from my ward and put on my uniform. And I went into the booth to do on the mic, and I could feel myself bleeding through my shirt. And I remember Faye looking at me, and I wasn't good. I wasn't in a good place at the time. But then obviously I went back to hospital straight after. But that was the passion I had.
I'll
do anything for Faye and the team and the football club. That's how much we were treated. We were treated with absolute incredible respect. This year is just, you know, I've had my hours cut, as you know, back in February time, and every time I was there, I just never felt appreciated. And I think it goes a long way to be appreciated.
Yeah, it does. You know, and I think that's with any job, you know. I mean, obviously, you're working, or you know, for a club you love. You know, I bet, for me personally, I think I would assume that everyone that works there is a Derby fan, whether they were born into that or not. But
yeah, most of them are. Of the staff that I know have gone, not through choice. They're all Derby fans and fantastic at what they do. Fantastic people. I also have a family member who's on the coaching staff in the academy. And I know I'm very close to the under-23s and the staff, because I've known Pat a very long time, going past before Derby County, and I know Richard, the kit lad, and I've got to know them doing the microphone over the many years for them, and they've suffered terribly through this, and to see some of the staff that have helped them, support them in the background, to lose their jobs, terrible really. And you know, there's some great people that have gone, and you know, it's very sad. They always say that you should have no real connection with a football club to make it work. I think Derby's quite a unique exception. I think for Derby County, it is the city. Derby is the city. And I think if you've got that black and white running through your veins, I think it always helps. And as we obviously go through this podcast, you'll feel my passion and my grievances towards things, but also my honest opinion on how things should work.
Yeah, I mean, just on sort of the administration, did you or any sort of members of staff feel that this club would end up in administration? Obviously, we know COVID hit hard, etc., as it did for every other club. But did we really see that this was coming? Because I think it shocked a lot of people.
I don't know on the full-time members of staff, but every time I went into the office, a lot of good people looked very, very down. As you know, Simon, you know, of the years that you've known me, I've got contacts who have been involved with the football club in the past, and I've been involved with on a professional basis in sport. And if you're asking me personally, was I knowing of the administration? I had a feeling, I had an inkling that things weren't right. And when it came, was I surprised? No, I wasn't. at the time when it got announced, I was actually out with Rami on a corporate do, and it was very awkward at 9 o'clock when me and Rami are presenting football awards at a football club, and then also it's announced that we're in administration. And you know, I've never got a 6.5 foot sheep in a van quick enough, to be honest. That sounds really wrong, but you know where we're from.
Get you there. Yeah, I mean, following the administration, obviously your colleagues leaving, what was going through everyone's minds then? Was it a sort of case of, oh my God, they've gone, am I next? Or was it just a case of, you know, was there much sort of communication from, I guess, the administrators from Quantum? If you can answer that, obviously.
Well, I'll answer it, what I saw. And, you know, there's people watching this from Derby County or listening to it. I'm only telling what I saw. When I went into the offices on match day and what have you, and doing the under-23 games, I just saw people who lived and breathed the football club in fear. And I've never seen it before at the football club. You know, it was always a good place to go. Like, I used to get in the car and I couldn't get there quick enough and get there and feel the buzz pre-match, and we'd all have a great crack and understand. But I was going into an office that was unbelievably doom and gloom and quiet. And I know that a guy, Ash, who was director of commercial and what have you, and sponsorship, what a great guy Ash was. I know that he unfortunately lost his role and through the cuts required. And then I heard of other people losing their role down at Moor Farm. And it was having a big effect on other staff, because obviously workload goes on top of everybody after that. And, you know, we all work to live. I don't dispute that. But, you know, some of these guys and girls generally worked for a football club that they absolutely adored and do anything for. And every time another member of staff went, throughout the process, it was clear to see every time we arrived for match day exercises and what have you, there was a very somber mood in the office. And it was very, very difficult to sort of motivate yourself once you're back out pitch side to not sort of show anyone your personal emotions.
No, I can imagine. You know, it's, I guess as time went on, and the administration continued. I guess them sort of feelings and you know, of fear got worse. You know, when we're hearing, you know, we're seeing players being sold, you know, because we haven't got a preferred bidder and we need to raise money. I guess that fear for some people got worse, thinking it could be me next.
Yeah. What I find really, really difficult is that I honestly feel that this was always planned, and it was just a matter of time for it to be released. And I'll say that loud. I don't believe for one minute this was forced upon by COVID. Yeah. I think this was pre-planned, and COVID was the excuse to try and get away with it. And if there's people watching me on this and all of a sudden ringing their lawyers or whatever, then so be it. It's an opinion. So in my opinion, allegedly, I just feel that it was all been handled really, really badly. Like, you know, when you see that administrators are trying to release the director of education from the football club, well, without the director of education or whatever his role is, you can't have an academy. The whole point of having an academy is having an academic structure with education. You can't get rid of the head of education as part of a cut. It's ludicrous, you know. And you know, I know for the fact that happened because he's a very close friend of mine who has that role, and they had to re-employ him straight away. And you just think to yourself, these are administrators who are involved in running our football club through treacherous times, and yet they don't even know the importance of certain roles. So, you know, and then you again, I don't mind saying what my opinion is. I see administrators walking around the offices with merchandise around their necks and what have you, laughing and joking with various, I don't know, I've seen the grandkids or sons and daughters, what have you, who have got, no, don't get me wrong, have no knowledge of what's happening within the football club. The young kids having a great time out.
Yeah.
But there's a time and a place to have that kind of jovial attitude. And it's not in the offices. On the football pitch, on Pride Park, no problem at all. It's an experience that everyone should enjoy. But also respect these people in those offices who have lost work colleagues. And, you know, I saw that a couple of times when I was there on duty, and I just feel that, you know, it's just not right, and it's disrespectful.
Yeah, no, it is. You know what I mean? Obviously, like I say, as a fan, we felt, I suppose, disrespected by Quantumer, by Mel, whoever, with the lack of sort of communication. You know, that's, we just getting nothing. It was just hearsay from different sort of media sources, all saying different things. What was the communication like with you guys?
Not a lot, really, to be fair. Like I said, this season, I've had my duties cut considerably. So I've just been coming in when asked. Still very passionate, very proud. But I was always told not to say anything. Just get on with your job. I just found almost that during pre-match, we're always like being watched. Or I just felt that there was always a case of, you know, you're on an NDA, I'm watching you. But on a personal level, I always felt I was watched a little bit more because of my connections with other people. Mm-hmm. And I just find that really daft. You know, I talk to a lot of people pitch side. You know, I'm a fan. I'm a massive fan. I'm a Derby lad. And I talk to people, you know, and I talk to guys on Radio Derby personally. They're friends. I've known Ed now ever since I've been on the mic.
Yeah.
I've always spoke to Ed Dawes on a regular basis. I've spoke to Chris Coles on a regular basis. Mm. You know, I spoke to Rich Cusack. I spoke to yourself. And every time I was seen sort of talking to Radio Derby, that may have not had anything to do with Derby whatsoever, I always saw and felt eyes were piercing me. And I just thought to myself, this is ridiculous. So yeah, that's just a personal thing. We just got on with the job. It got to the point where we always used to meet after the game. And have a pint in the backyard and sort of celebrate or commiserate ourselves, but ultimately be proud of the job that we'd done, because we've had some fantastic years at the football club in the playoffs and whatever, and it's a very tough ask to run a match day. I think people don't realise how hard a job it is, and there's volunteers as well as paid staff, and they do a phenomenal thing for the club. But it got to the point where people wouldn't even meet for a drink after because they're fearful of just sitting down and talking. And it just a shame. Again, that's my opinion, but, you know, call me out, whoever wants to discuss that. Well, I always felt as a grown adult, it just wasn't the same this year. It always felt as if you were being watched.
It does sort of feel like, I think, I mean, this is the thing. We've heard all sorts of stories, you know, even about fans having police being sent around the doors and stuff like this. And, you know, we've seen our local media being ripped apart by fans because they're not getting, you know, they don't feel like they're getting the questions answered. You know, they don't think, you know, I've seen Ed Dawes has had a lot of stick thrown his way, which, you know, personally, I'm like you, I'm friends of Ed Dawes. I've known him now for about 18 months now. We started playing football together, you know, and I've known him, you know, on a personal basis. And I just think that I don't think it's been that easy to get information out, because like you said there, you feel like you're being watched, you know, and that's, for me, is how it's felt like through this Mel Morris tenure, that anybody that has a slip up, he'll be straight on you, whether that be a fan, staff, media, you know, that's the way it's felt. And, you know, it's all right for people to say, oh, why isn't Ed Dawes doing this? Why is Steve Dixon not doing this? You know, why are they not actually, getting the answers that fans want? But the simple fact is they can't, because we know what, you know, Mel Morris is like, I guess. He will, you know, he's very quick to sort of put NDAs in place. And if you break that NDA, you're in serious trouble.
Oh, absolutely. And let's be honest, Simon, we know who his eyes and ears are. Mm. You know, I think this, you know, his name gets shouted out as the main person responsible for this. But, you know, let's just say the eyes that were always piercing me weren't his, and there were someone else's who, you know, and again, he'll probably watch this and hear this at some point, you know, and who knows what will happen. But I'm only telling that how it is. I never felt comfortable working around that individual. I always felt they had a vendetta. I always felt that he was never approachable. And ultimately, going on to Ed, you know, he's a great journalist. I can't believe the stick that he's received recently off Twitter, bang out of order. He's a very passionate guy. His opinion is justified. I like Ed a lot. I would go so far to say that he has been a voice for Derby as best as he can go without, like you said, the NDAs, and he's got to be careful because ultimately it's his full-time role. Yeah. He has to live as well. And if he gets tape put across his mouth and not allowed to do what he's good at, then, you know, he doesn't earn a living.
Yeah, it's the BBC as well. That's what we've got to think about. He works for the BBC, you know what I mean? So it's there. It would come down on the BBC, and, you know, that's at the end of the day, that's said, like you said, it says job, it says living.
No. It's absolutely. But the interesting thing is, Simon, when it comes to journalism, it's amazing how many, or let's just say a certain journalist or two, seem to always get the inside track. Mm. Not mentioning their names, John Percy. but it just was so obvious that slips of tongue and information were being passed to him from one side.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just feel that that was wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel that there's been very few administrations in football that have been NDA tight like this. Mm. You know, you've got the biggest one probably in the history of English football currently going through process now.
Yeah, Chelsea.
At Chelsea. And that's very open. Mm. And look at the issue behind that and the reasons being of why the club is for sale.
That's an
awful situation for based upon the war in Ukraine and what's happening and why the owners decided to sell. But it's always been open to the fans, and I just find this whole NDA situation could have been handled so much better. I'm not disputing that there's certain information that has to be kept behind doors. I get it, Simon. I get it completely. Yeah. But come on, you know, there is information that can be processed. You know, I think a lot of it has been, how can I put it? I think a lot of it has been hidden through various companies and structures and what have you. Mm. And no doubt as we go further into the podcast, we'll delve into that. But I just think in general, the public deserved an insight of what was happening through the local press. The local press weren't interested in condemning anyone or damning anyone by name. All they wanted was information to allow people who were generally struggling to deal with all this, because football is their life. The football club is the life of so many people in this city.
Yeah.
And without the football club, that it ruins their day-to-day life. And if you could just give them a bit of information, you know, whether it's positive or negative, be honest, because without information, they say no news is good news. Yeah. But sometimes no news is bad news, because it gives people the wrong impression.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Well, speaking of, obviously, you've moved it on nicely, and that's obviously Chris Kirchner seems to be the total opposite. Obviously, he was announced the preferred bidder, and he's doing everything he can to keep fans informed. It's like a total 180. I mean, like, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about the way he sort of conducts himself on Twitter? You know, things are good thing, bad thing, could be a little bit more, could be a little bit less, you know.
Twitter.
Are you old school or what?
Twitter gets me into trouble all the time, as you know. And you know, we try and stay as professional as possible, but sometimes my head speaks before my lips. I think that I understand why Twitter is used by Chris. It is a platform of reaching out to thousands and hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people around the world, and obviously followers of the club. I think that it would have been nice to hear him earlier with Radio Derby, in my opinion. I think a lot of information was being put out on Twitter when Ed was trying to get an interview. And I think some of the information, because not everyone's on Twitter.
No, of course not. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you've got a lot of diehard Derby fans who are of the age that they would have no idea what social media is. Yes. So if they could hear his voice. Mm. And also, when you hear a voice, you can understand the passion and the feeling behind what's being said by, you know, the way they speak, the way they approach, their tone.
Yeah, I mean, well, case in point was that one he did with Rams TV. Speaking of the hurdles, you could see and hear the anger in his voice that he wants this deal to be done, but there's ultimately one roadblock in the way, which is Mel Morris and the stadium.
Yeah, and his frustration is now starting to spill over, isn't it? He's got to the point where he's hit a roadblock. I think the roadblock's been there for a long, long time, and I still think the roadblock will be there until the final hour, the final minute. I think that Chris has handled himself very professionally. Mm. I think his passion has overspilt in some senses, and it would with me if I had the attempts to buy the football club. And trust me, if I had a couple of hundred million in my bank, I'd be there going forward. But I just think that the roadblocks they're put in front of him don't have to be NDA. In my opinion.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, Simon. We all know who the problem is. Mm. And I think Chris is trying to let the world know without going into too much information. But I think we don't need necessarily the contractual legalities, because obviously they're complicated. What we need to know is why the block is there. Mm. It doesn't need to be a reason. There doesn't need to be a financial reasoning behind it. Just be to a simple, this is the reason why the club can't go forward. So I think Chris is now, obviously, time's against him. Mm. I've been reading on social media, no doubt you have, that Wayne left the stadium this afternoon or early this evening, very angry, very disillusioned after meetings after he refused to sign. Well, he didn't refuse to sign, of course. I think clearly he was very upset and got into his car and left the stadium. So, you know, read into that what you will. But I think that Chris has been nothing but professional and passionate. And again, he did his YouTube chat with Amanda Salloway, didn't he, on Wednesday?
Yeah.
why perhaps Radio Derby couldn't have had that prior to that, I just don't understand.
No.
I think it would have been better doing it that way. Or coming on your podcast, of course, Simon.
This is very true. There is still time. It might be, you never know. it'd be nice to it'd be nice to have him on the show, have a chat, see what his plans are and everything. That would be great. And again, like I say, it's another way that of communication, you know, with fans, you know, whether it be Twitter, podcast, radio, you know, I think it's got to be better than it was. And I think with Chris, you know, this is the horrible thing. This is supposed to be the day that that he came in charge of the club or funded the club. And we're still talking about if he comes, you know, becomes owner of the club. It's getting to the point now, you know, especially today when we've heard, you know, all sorts of stuff. I've heard so much stuff today, you know, I've literally heard that one, Mike Ashley's bought a stadium. I've heard behind everybody's back. Then it's like, oh, no, it's not. And it's still in Mel Morris's hands. I've heard, oh, the council have had a deal for it. Then it's, no, it's not. You know, to me, everything's been back and forward today. So no one really knows what's going off.
It's a strange one, because I think there's obviously thousands of people out there who are unbelievably passionate and they're crying out to the council to buy the stadium. But you've got to remember, you know, I've heard that the price is more than what the council are prepared to pay is the big stumbling block, or that price has gone up recently.
Yeah.
This is a council with a budget.
Yeah.
And if you take a stadium purchase out of that budget of running the city, and whether it's 20, 25, 30 million, all these figures that are being stated, that's going to hit the city hard if you don't recoup that money quickly. You know, I presume the plan was for the council to potentially buy it and then it to be leased or bought over a period of time.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know the ins and outs of that, and I think the council have got to be very, very wary, obviously, with the elections that have just been held. And I believe that there's no majority within the council. So you've got no clear leader either.
Yeah, yeah.
Although you've got Mr. Poulter, who's the leader of the council, he has no real party behind him. So I think it's like, I don't know how local politics work, but me personally, I don't think that's the right way forward.
Yeah,
I think that in history says that any club that doesn't own its stadium, there's been nothing but problems. Coventry, classic example.
Yeah.
I think some other lower league clubs where it's not quite worked out. I presume that Mr. Morris is looking for a certain potential owner who has the money to buy it outright.
Yeah.
Whether he's saying that Chris hasn't got those funds. Mm. You know, some people are saying on social media today, why do you just buy the stadium? Mm. If you've got enough money to control the football club, why not buy the stadium? You know, some people are now saying, build a stadium.
Yeah.
Well, you know, building a stadium isn't £50 a square foot.
No.
You know, I mean, you're talking, you know, hundreds of pounds a square foot to build a stadium. And also you need the land to do it. And
yeah, we had a brief discussion last night of, you know, where that could potentially happen. And I think, you know, I mentioned Rainsway, but then again, you mentioned there was nowhere to park. Access isn't great, you know. So again, it's one way, it's finding that place, isn't it? You know, and that, you know, that isn't so far out from the city that there's, you know, because people want to go to the football. They want to, you know, have a few drinks and whatnot. It took a while when Pride Park was first built to get a few pubs close to the ground, you know.
Yeah, the only land that realistically, you know, if we're going down that avenue for 5 minutes, the only land that's really available in Derby is Infinity Way.
Mm.
Between sort of Chelston down to Simpin. There's a lot of land there that's for sale that hasn't been taken up. And you've got the new Moorways facility down the road, which has now been built and looks fantastic. Although I hear someone's graffitied it already. I don't see any of the land available in Derby.
No.
Unless there's something out of the city realms. Is that a not viable option? I don't think it is. You know, don't get me wrong. I think it'd be quite a feat to have two stadiums of that size in a city so small. Yeah. I just don't see it happening. Then they're talking about ground sharing, Simon.
Mm.
And I've seen all these comments about sharing with Stoke City and Leicester and Notts County. Yeah. Now, I'm gonna ask one question. Really? Are the local police going to be happy with that? $25,000 Derby fans going to Stoke?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is it, isn't it? I mean, Notts County, I can't see happening at all. Because you're guaranteed to, when they put the fixtures out, there's no way they're going to want to put Nottingham and Derby, 5 mile apart or whatever it is.
It's ludicrous. Realistically, Chesterfield is about your only option. I think that's a capacity of 11,000.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely little stadium. That realistically is your only option.
Yeah.
And they would bring in they would love the revenue, obviously, with them. I think they're struggling to qualify for the playoffs now.
Yeah.
I think their season's gone a bit south. I think they even lost again today. So that would really be the only viable option, Chesterfield. I don't think you can include Burton in the equation, and I don't think you can include Leicester City in the equation because, the Leicester City ground is further away than you think.
Yeah.
It's a good 35, 40 minutes journey.
Maybe begrudge Leicester Tigers playing there or something as well. They like their pitch or something, don't they? They're not going to want, they're not going to want four games a week or three games a week on that pitch, are they? Let's be honest.
I'll tell you, the other suggestion you could have is you've got Moreways Bowl. Now, Moreways Bowl was going to be, and this is folklore and it is true, it was going to be suggested as the new stadium back in the early 70s. It was looked at. Now, you could put in some stanchions and some temporary seating because the pitch there isn't too bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's the biggest playing surface in Derby. I think it's even bigger than Pryor Park. And you've already got the bowl and the structure, and you've also got the park in there.
Yeah, yeah.
With the new facility, with the athletics track. So there is an argument that you could probably put 12,000, 15,000 seats around that temporary. That's one option I'd look at.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly as a short term. But let's not even concern ourselves. I think that's the sort of final straw. I think that whatever happens, Simon, I think a deal has to be struck, including the stadium. You can't have them as separate entities. You just can't.
No, you can't. And
but what happens if this council buys it, and in 2 years' time the council gets taken over by a party that's not football par se, shall we say, or parfait, and they turn around and go, "We want our money."
Yeah.
And we're still in League One or League Two, wherever we are, and we can't afford it. You're always under the realms of under someone else's control. And I just don't think that works for a football club.
No, it doesn't. And it is tough. We do need that ground back. And, I know you obviously said, mentioned that people are saying, why not just buy the ground? Mm-hmm. Well, why would you spend, 25, 30 million on a ground that without a football team is probably worth 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 million?
The stadium.
But it's worth it. That stadium's worth it without the football club.
It is. And ultimately, I saw that Leicester City have now got planning permission to put a roof over theirs.
Mm.
And, I'm hearing through contacts there that they could have that on there within 18 months, which means that's going to be ready for the sort of 2023-24 season. Yeah. Well, all of a sudden, Pride Park and its dreams and ambitions of having the roof. And as you know, I've had knowledge about the roof for a long, long time, well before it appeared on Twitter. And your chance is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have two stadiums within the East Midlands with that facility of having a roof. You just can't. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I think that if they want Pryor Park, like you said, if they want Pryor Park to be valuable at the moment, I agree with you. I think, real estate-wise, the land is probably only worth 8 and 10 million, and then also, I'm not so sure that they own much of it outside the stadium. I think the council, because of course a lot of the parking is still council ran. Parking to the left of it is owned or leased certainly by the retail park, and I'm pretty sure that Mr. Gadsby owns quite a bit of it, because wasn't there that discussion about having a plaza, a shopping plaza mall and hotel, and they were going to buy the land off someone for it.
Mm.
And now all of a sudden we're talking about the council buying just the stadium. It has to be, unfortunately, to me, renting it makes no sense.
No.
That's just my opinion. I think if you're going to buy a football club, you have to have, if you've got the the power to own a football club and run a football club surely must have the capacity to buy the stadium as well, because that is, like you said, the ultimate commodity. Mm. And, you know, what comes with a stadium? It comes all the assets with it, commercial, yeah. catering, hospitality, business use throughout the week, mm. you know, satellite offices, training centres. You've got the pub, you've got the coffee shop that hasn't been open now for how long. And I always said, that was a big mistake. Kicking yeah. Starbucks out doesn't make any sense. Greggs is a lease. Why aren't Derby County selling, sorry, no disrespect to Greggs, but why aren't Derby County selling their own pies and their own sausage rolls? Yeah, why yeah. aren't Birds in there? Birds, mm. Birds, who are the ultimate Derby brand for when it comes to catering, are nowhere in sight. Why not? Yeah. Yeah, the catering within the football club is run by a great company, Delaware,
mm.
or Delaware North. But, you know, surely if you're going to run a football club and own a football club, then sometimes you've got to have the risk and the gamble, because there's some wonderful staff that work for Delaware. And I mean, all of them are amazing. They do a fantastic match day experience. And I've been part of that and seen that myself. But if you're going to make money running a football club, you've got to have as much revenue coming in that you solely look after.
Yeah,
you know, merchandise, who runs that now, Simon? Who owns the rights to the football kit? You know, might know more than me.
Well, I know obviously we had that deal with Fanatics, haven't we? But we don't, obviously, you know, we assume that's still going. And I know some people said, oh, you buy merchandise, that you only get a small commission. I don't believe they do. I think it's, and I saw somebody said you get about, the club earns about 5% off each kit they sell. Well, I think that's a bit, you know, I don't think that's right. Yeah, I'm sure it's more.
What I find amazing, Simon, and sorry, to, is that Umbro is a, don't get me wrong, Umbro is a fantastic brand and I'm wearing it myself now. But can you remember when we had Ramswear?
Mm.
And it was a popular time, you know. Lionel Pickering had that vision.
Okay.
And we had a lovely kit. It was a gorgeous kit. Mm. You know, when I used to remember putting my collar up and having the Tommy Johnson buttons up and what yeah. have you. And it worked a treat. And everything that came through that, obviously he sourced it locally mm. to be produced.
Yeah.
And then all the revenue stream came in within the football club. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, and again, I might be speaking out of turn here. I don't know. I'm on here as a fan, ultimately. Mm. But there's got to be revenue streams. Because at the moment, what is he buying?
Yeah.
What, you know, if you write it down now, Simon, when you buy Derby County Football Club for however much he's buying it for,
mm.
let's write down what exactly is available. You know, let's go through the list now. Is he buying the catering?
No.
Is he buying the commercial outlets of the merchandise?
No.
Are they buying the coffee shop?
No.
No, we know who owns that. The yeah. backyard?
No.
You know, how many members of the squad are left?
Three, four, is it? Four, five?
Yeah. Does he own the stadium?
No.
What are you buying then?
Exactly. Debt. You're buying...
So where's the revenue? What, yeah. Yeah, if you buy that for a few quid, or I don't know how much, what? Where's your revenue stream from that?
Yeah, exactly. You can't do anything with it because everything's at the stadium, which ultimately he doesn't own.
Yeah, and you know, that's nothing to do with the staff that work there. Because like I said, every staff member of that football club is phenomenal. Yeah. Whoever they work for, whoever pays their wage, they are phenomenal. And I'm so proud to be associated with all of them in some way, from stewards to catering to event staff to full-time staff. I've had the pleasure of knowing so many people.
Mm.
But ultimately, if we're talking business and this football club to survive, to me, it all needs to be getting to a point where it becomes in-house. You don't have to lose staff for it to come in-house, because the staff are the bread and butter and the rock of it. But yeah. If you're bringing in commercial activity into the stadium and concerts and whatever, and boxing, and, you know, I know this, and people will say to me, you're talking absolute crap, Chris, but you got to remember, you know, we're talking about the Zach Parker and the Andrade fights that unfortunately postponed. I was the first guy that brought a world title fight to Derby back in 1999, 2000, when Johnny Nelson fought Carl Thompson at the Storm Arena. As you know, mate, that was my baby. I ran that with Mike Horton at the Storm Arena. We had 8 weeks to run that, and we had 5,000 people in that absolute dive of the Thunderdome.
Yeah.
So I know what it takes to run something like that live on Sky Telly. And I brought in all my own catering, and all kinds of things was going wrong behind the scenes, which is another podcast. But ultimately, you for something to succeed, you have to bring it all into your own till.
Yeah.
You can sell leases to people. I don't know how much people pay to run the facilities at Derby regarding the catering, regarding the leases for Greg's. But surely the only revenue source that's going to come into the football club to make it profitable is to have it all in-house.
Yeah.
And if you said to a Derby fan, Simon, you know, you come and pay X amount to have a three-course meal, pre-match, meet a legend and watch the game, and knowing that that's going into the Derby County till, or you buy a sausage roll that's supplied by Birds,
but
ultimately sold to you by Derby County catering,
yeah,
you're going to buy it because you ultimately, you know that money is going back into your football club.
Yeah.
Ramsware, we'll go back to that, Simon. I'm sorry I'm waffling a bit, but I just don't understand how this club has been fractured over the years into pieces that make no sense at all. It makes no business sense whatsoever.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. And that's probably why we are where we are, because it's been poorly run. You know, we've all seen it, you know. And the thing is, you've had people that have, I guess, they've sort of not seen the real ins and outs of everything. You know, there's a few people I've seen, you know, across social media that know exactly what they've seen. They know exactly what's going on. They knew it was going to go tits up. It was only just a matter of time. But everybody else has been blindsided because they didn't realise. But, you know, now it's come to this, people are starting to sort of turn around and go, okay, yeah, those that I slated for being pessimistic at the time were actually, they were right. You know, because this club would not be in the situation that it's in if it was run properly, which ultimately it hasn't been. And now, you know, we still don't know if we've got a future. We hope to do. You know, we hope that, I guess, Chris Kirchner, you know, comes through in the next, I guess, you know, his exclusivity runs out today. So for me, it's either him or is it liquidation?
No. What happens is he loses the exclusivity, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then it goes out to tender again. Now,
is the money left in the club?
Well, to get exclusivity, don't you have to pay the administrators a certain fee? I don't know. You still got their fee, remember?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is going up by the week. Like, we're hearing figures of 2.7 and 3.2 being banded around.
It's a steak meal, that, isn't it?
You know, don't get me wrong. You know, we all want a resolution. And if Chris Kirchner saves our football club, then fantastic. All the things he said are positive. And I'm more than happy for him to contact me. And, you know, I'd gladly sit down with him, you know, and go through my ideas, what I think should happen. If he doesn't get the club, I personally think there is a plan B. I think there is someone behind the scenes waiting. And I also believe that probably Mr. Morris believes that another party might be more preferential to him because he's going to get a cheque on his or a direct debit to his bank account for his stadium. Who knows? Again, it's speculation. Mm. We're speaking on an evening of the complete unknown while meetings are happening as we speak.
Yeah.
But again, it comes back down to people have an issue with other people who've ran football clubs.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at the Newcastle fans having a go at Mike Ashley, but the only reason they had to go at him is because he wasn't crazy enough to throw silly pound after silly pound into a football club. His role was purely as a businessman. He took that club out of an absolute mess.
Yeah.
Gave them an identity, gave them a football club to be proud of, sustainable.
Yeah.
You know, I hear that when obviously they got relegated, went into the FL, he caused a stir into the FL because he's a man of his voice, he's a man of opinion. But he left that club with a profit. He sold it for 350 million quid. He bought it for probably, I hear, 20 million was the figure, or even less. A stadium to be proud of. There'll never be a superpower when you've got a man who realistically, purely, is driven by business. Yeah. But I tell you what, he's done a damn good job there. And the Newcastle fans are just bitter because of the fact he wasn't prepared to go and put every penny he had. We had that before in our football club, Simon, with Lynham.
Yeah, yeah.
And what happened? The poor bloke, bless his cotton socks, I had a lot of time for Lynham. Absolutely wonderful man. You know, he gave everything he had. He was broke when he sadly passed away. Now, that's not what you want in a football club. You know, he tried to give his heart took ahead of his head.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mike Ashley and people like that will never do so. Mm. And I think that when you go into a situation like this, you've got to have deep pockets. You've got to have it realistically, but you've also got to have a very level head on where your revenue income's coming, because ultimately, yeah, if we sell 25,000 season tickets, which is fantastic, that only goes so far.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, so, exactly. And that's it. I mean, I think that's one thing we can congratulate this year is the fans. The fans this season have turned up in the thousands, you know, home and away. Sold out three times I think we've sold out this season? You know, and again today, they're absolutely immense. You're 30, you're full house on the last day of the season where you know that you're relegated and there's nothing to play for. And we lost, but...
Simon, well, let's be honest. And I say this to people. When I'm pitch side on the mic or pitch side working, and I'm working right on the centre circle with flag bearers and mascots and what have you, you can't hear yourself.
No.
It sends shivers down your spine. We have the... I'm biased, you're biased. We have the best fans in the world.
Yeah,
we do. We do. And you know, they are an absolute honour and joy to be part of, because what they've done this year and what they've gone through this year, I doubt you'll ever see again, because the EFL have changed their rules now to make sure it doesn't happen again. Mm. What surprise, and that's another podcast, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
So you probably will never see this kind of season again of points deductions. And let's be honest, every trial and tribulation that could happen to Derby has happened. Mm. But our fans have stood absolutely proud and never gave up. And you know what? They say that the 12th man is important. Well, we showed that. You know, yeah. Let's be honest. They could have given up back in September, October time, but they didn't. And, you know, they're the epitome of Derby County Football Club. Mm. And like, we go back to what we've just been discussing. The local influence of this football club is bigger than anything else in the East Midlands.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably in the Midlands. You know, it's, you could compare it to your Newcastles, your Sunderlands. Football is the bread and butter of this football club. The fans are the bread and butter of this football club. Now, don't get me wrong, Simon. Would you have a fan on the board?
No.
No, I wouldn't. It makes no sense.
I don't understand it. I don't get how a fan can make a decision when they're not actually putting any money into it. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, well, ultimately, there's people... I've got to be careful what I say here, but I think there's people on Twitter who are in it for their own crown and glory and their own throne, and we won't go into that conversation. But going back to the fans, there should be as one. There should be as one, and they are as one. They should have one voice. And, you know, you're a part of Black and White Together, and what a phenomenal job they've done. And Punjabi Rams, what a phenomenal set of guys they've done. And, you know, all the way through to the Rams Trust, they've done some great work. But I think that we need to remember we should always approach these things as one. And today again showed without a shadow of a doubt why players and why staff and why Wayne Rooney loves this football club. We are unique. We, you know, I always say to people when I go abroad and I work abroad, as you know, I've just recently come back from Sweden, basketball refereeing. And when I was out there, I watched the Fulham game. And obviously 1-2-1, and I'm watching in a hotel in Sweden, and I'm going absolutely bonkers, and I'm kissing my badge, and you know, I've got other English referees kissing the badge, and everyone turns around and says, we don't get it. What? Who are you? And I went, who are we? I says, we are a small city in the middle of England. How many, do we have 300,000 in our city? I think something like that.
Well, yeah.
So if we get 30,000 every week out of 300,000, that's 10% of our city population going to a football. That's incredible, 10%. Now, Manchester United may get 70,000, but there's 6 million people live in Manchester.
Yeah.
So 70,000 out of 6 million is bugger all.
Yeah.
And most of them are from Manchester anyway.
That's true.
So if it shows you that if you want to see the size of our football club, look at the percentage of the capacity of its population and how many go to the match. When they go away, how many go away? 4,000 to Blackpool. Incredible.
Yeah. We sell out every away game this season. We've sold out every single one.
Yeah. And again, it comes back down to the heart and soul of this football club is the city. Keep it within the realms of what makes this city tick. When the football is good, the city ticks.
Yeah.
Industry ticks, Rolls-Royce, Bombardier, Toyota. There is a buzz around the place. Production goes up. It's common fact. You win a football match on a Monday, production goes flying. It's buzzing.
Yeah.
So whoever takes over the football club need to take that on board. Don't make it Americanized. You know, and I've been in professional basketball, as you know, for a long, long time. Don't go over the top and glamour. It's not required. What is required is a heart and soul.
Yeah.
You know, it's in your DNA, youth, as Matt says every week. And it is. It's all about the city. Mm. You go to Germany, and I don't know if you've had the pleasure of going to Germany. I've worked out in Düsseldorf.
I've been to Osnabrück when I was 10 with the other boys.
Did you go to the local stadium there?
No, we didn't.
So I went to Düsseldorf a few times, and they play at the Messe. And it's a stadium which you wouldn't know it's a stadium because they don't advertise a lot of football out on the outside. Because it's like the NEC with a football stadium in the middle.
Right, with
it's got a capacity of 50,000. But what they do, which is very, very clever, is every lamppost and sort of within the square mile going into the stadium, it's in the colours.
Yeah.
It's in the colours of the football club. So to me, Pride Park should have black lamppost, white lamppost, make it an experience. So when away fans come into the area, they think, oh my God. You know what I mean?
I'd love to know his idea was to put red lampposts around there.
Well, exactly. But this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. People need to be responsible in roles that understood what marketing this football club and promoting this football club all about. You know, I used to be involved with the Derby Storm many years ago, as you know, for many years I was, and we used to sell out more ways, even after a Derby County game. We used to have 1,500, 2,000 people in more ways. Phenomenal, because we knew what was right and how to sell that experience. It was all about reminding people that they're representing the city.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think, we need to go back to the bread and butter. If we're going to get out of League One, we need to understand that Derby County is going to be the FA Cup final for how many of those clubs in that division? 10, 12. So they need to come to Pride Park absolutely shitting themselves.
Yeah.
Not going there with the, oh God, if we beat these, it'll be the greatest experience. They need to go there and feel the black and white. As they approach Pride Park, they need to feel the presence of a football club, of the culture, of the noise. Liverpool tonight, just going into the stadium, 30,000 people waiting for a coach to go into Anfield, red and white everywhere. You know, just bonkers. Flares going off. And we have the fan base to do that. And the club needs to see, whoever takes this club needs to see that is the way to the hearts. That is the way to run this club. Make it black and white wherever you go.
Well, I tell you what, mate. We'll have to have a word with Chris. See if we get you a job.
Hey, you know what? Come on, bring him on the podcast. I'm more than happy, mate. Yeah, this is opinion again, and you know, I might be out of turn, and you know, I might get a phone call tomorrow morning saying your services are no longer. Oh, I don't know. To be honest, it comes from the heart, and I if someone gave me the opportunity to get inside that football club and turn it around. so what if you have a sponsor on the stadium? Mm. You know, we could have this podcast going for 3 or 4 hours while it is. You know, if you called it the Sports Direct Stadium, no pun intended.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What? If it brings in 20 million quid, you could call it whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I nearly said, you know, you could call it any product you want.
Mm.
You know, ultimately, if it brings in revenue and it's Derby County's revenue, we always know it as Pride Park Stadium. If it has a title in front of it, so what? Unless it's called the Sports Direct Stadium. Oh, other good sports shops are available.
Not BBC, don't worry.
Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
people,
yeah.
I don't understand. You know, keep the football traditional, keep the black and white in the surrounding area, make it a fortress, but the revenue comes from putting a name on the stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
Just don't ask iPro because they couldn't afford. Well, that was another story. Yeah. But yeah, it's
well, exactly. I mean, like you say, you've got with, I say, well, you've got Sports Direct. If Mike Ashley took over, so what? We had, at the end of the day, when it was the iPro, I think the only people that called it the iPro Stadium was those in the media, those on Sky, because that's what they had to. Everybody else called it Pride Park. If you look at Chris Kirchner, he's got Slink, his business. He'll call it the Slink Arena, the Slink Stadium, whatever. It, like you said, it's revenue.
If you pay for it.
Well, yeah, that's it, isn't it?
I used to call it, hey, when it was the iPro Stadium, the amount of times when I was on the mic, when it was no longer the iPro, I still called it the iPro. And when it was the iPro, I called it Pride Park. Oh, mate, it was a bloody nightmare. But that was a farce of a deal.
Mm.
Another farce of a deal.
Did that get cancelled halfway through as well?
Well, yeah, by the way, Bulls, they didn't have a pot to piss in.
Yeah.
Who did the due diligence on that? When you sign a £10 million sponsorship deal, do your research.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't ask for money to be spread over 10 years based on projections of sales in the co-op or whatever they sold their stuff at. Well, to be fair, iPro was quite nice, you know. There's many a time I pinched a bottle of iPro. No, I didn't pinch, sorry. I borrowed a bottle of iPro from the... press conference after.
Borrowed to give to the ball boy, that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know what I mean? I used to drink it to keep my voice in tune throughout the game, and it was all right.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It wasn't the answer to the sponsorship deal at the time. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You know, so, well, I mean, yeah. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be addressed that, you know, if it is Chris Kirchner, if it is whoever it is, takes over his club, you know, which is the sad thing is, like I said earlier on, I'm still saying if such and such takes over, you know, but.
What do you think? What do you think, Simon? You've asked me my opinion. This is your podcast, mate.
Yeah,
what
I know, but it changed dynamics when I have a guest on. It means
you tell the audience now what you want to think is going to happen.
I honestly don't know. This morning I was revved up and, you know, I was thinking, yeah, today's the day, you know, Kirchner will take us over, the council will buy the ground and everything will be happy days come 3 o'clock. Well, yeah, well, whatever time it was, 2:30. The result today didn't matter to me. I just thought today was all about getting things sorted. But now I'm back to the insecurity thinking, I've spoke to obviously Salam, who's been on here, about takeovers with the Sheikh beforehand. I've spoke to Salam about Eric Alonso. That takeover. Why is it
due diligence? Where was the due diligence done? Where's the research done?
Exactly. Like Salam said to me, the Sheikh thing. The research he did, it was legit. It was basically funded by government essentially in Dubai. That's where it's coming from. But they ought to be pulled out. But why? Why is this football club so hard to sell? You know, I've chatted to the Binnies, you know, and they've been desperate to do a deal since before we went into administration. Couldn't get it over the line. No one seems to be able to get this club sold. And it just feels like it's going the same way. For me, I am worried about the future of the club. I feel that there might not be a next season. That's where my heart is at this evening. You know, like I say, this morning, I was all revved up and I thought it was going to be the day, but come tonight, I feel that this could be the last game we've played full stop as a team, you know. And when you see the subs that Rooney made today, like Lawrence coming off, Ruse coming on, That's random. No Burn in the squad, no Bielik in the squad. Bielik was another one that sort of ran off from the fans, didn't look at like signing autographs or anything like that. So for me, it felt like it was sort of coming to an end, but for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, Christian Bielik, you know, that's another commodity. What's happening with Christian? He's going to go to the World Cup in November. Is he going to play League One football to keep a sustained squad place in Poland? No. Would you sell him? Absolutely. You know, there was always that shadow. You know, when you have a Rolls Royce like that in a football club, ultimately, even if he would have stayed in the Championship, I think the only thing that might go against him is injury.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think there was a lot of good buys there today. You normally could tell. And also, we've been both looking at social media this evening, and I noticed that Ebiseli has said, you know, for now.
Yeah, on his Instagram. Interesting, that one is. Very interesting. I mean, I can't see it. I think Rooney mentioned his presser afterwards about Watford. I think he'll be going there. I don't think he'll be coming back next season, personally. But it was a tough pill to swallow today. It did feel like we were saying goodbye to a lot of players that ultimately have all said that they want to be here next season, but I can't see it. At the end of the day, I would not begrudge a player for going to a different club, you know, because then this is their livelihood. You know, they've got to earn money. You know, they've got, you know, people say, yeah, but they're loaded, all this, the footballers. Don't, no. People live to their means. You know, if I can afford to buy a Ferrari, I'm buying one, because why not? Yeah. You know what I mean? You live your life how you want to. You know, if you can afford nice things, you'll buy nice things. And that's what footballers do. And, you know, if they want to continue their career and they want to progress their career, you've got to think we've got a lot of young players in this squad, the likes of Knight, Bird, Buchanan, Sibley, Plange, Ebiowe, Ebiseli, you know, all them are in the late teens, early 20s. They want to play football for a long, long time. And they do.
But Simon, it comes back down to accounting again. Who allowed these salaries to be signed? These numbers that are being suggested, that the likes of Tom have been on and Christian have been on, and Christian Bieder was 10 million quid,
$2.5 million
a year over 4 years. But you know, we saw they never played it at best Championship level, predominantly League One, if I remember rightly.
We had a few games of the Champions League into your league for
us. And you know, 10 million quid, would you say it was good value? He's been a wonderful player, but he's been off the pitch as much as he's been on the pitch. And he's been unfortunate. I don't dispute that. But, you know, I think there's a lot to be said about youth in the team. And I've watched under 23s closely, you know, with me being connected with doing a lot of the PA in for him. And I've seen all these lads come through the system. But I think when you're going into League One, I think you've also got to be structured. I think you can look at a model, and any model, to sort of, I think Luton is a cracking model. A stadium which is I always think it's been held up by the terrace houses either side. I think that's the only reason why they're joined to it, to keep it standing. And I always find it bizarre when you go to the away end there at Luton and you go up the stairs and someone's brushing their teeth, or even worse, in the bathroom. And I just find that hilarious. But looking at their model, they went non-league, didn't they, a few years ago? And I watched their game in full this evening before I came on here. And the star of the show was Cameron Jerome.
It was. I agree. I watched it as well. You know,
What a cheeky goal, by the way. Fantastic goal. But ultimately, if you look at their model throughout, their squad has been based on that league at that time. And it's predominantly been experienced and old heads. And they play a style of football which works. And you know what? They have got a great chance to get in the Premier League. They get Huddersfield in the playoffs, so they avoid the big two. Forest and Sheffield United, one of them's going. Which is hilarious, because I can't stand both of them for various reasons. Luton quite easily turn over Huddersfield. and gets the final and quite easily turn over a 1-0 win again in the Premier League. So they would have gone from non-league to the Premier League. And I don't think that's ever been done.
Yeah.
I can't think of another non-league team that's ever hit the Premier League. Whereas your Oldham have done it the other way around, which isn't a great record. But, but you know, I think that selling some of our assets and what we've got left, which is Bielik, Jason, you know, they want to say fantastic, but there's got to be a realism behind what we can afford.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Ebuowi, how much is he worth? I watched him destroy teams when he was an academy player.
Yeah.
And I mean destroy teams. You know, he's going to be being looked at by everybody in the championship and above.
Yeah, yeah.
I hear that the German team's looking at him closely. Look what they've done with Bellingham.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sancho. You know, if someone from that neck of the woods said to Malcolm, come over to Germany.
Yeah. No brainer, isn't it?
Well, yeah. So there's all kinds of things that need to be looked at sensibly. You know, so I think when people are saying they want to stay, fantastic. I want to stay. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to be a realist. You know, the squad that you need to get out of that League One next year, we've all watched the playoffs. The playoffs last night, Sunderland and Sheffield Wednesday, that was a game of football. That was a great game of football.
Yeah,
and Patrick Roberts was on there and Lee Gregory. And you watched the game the night before between Wickham and NK Dons, and it was absolutely awful. You know, I can't stand Wickham for many reasons. I think their manager looks like something out of Bon Jovi. I think they play football as if it's Bon Jovi. I just can't stand them. And NK Dons tried to play football, and Wickham just wouldn't let them play football. Now let's hope that NK Dons turn them over at their place. And you have a footballing final. But again, going back to Sunderland Sheffield Wednesday, they've got two squads that have been built for that league and are very good footballing teams.
Yeah.
But one if not both of them, may still be in there.
It's a tough one. I mean, a lot, you know, I know some fans think it's be a League One tour, be in and out one season. I can't say it because the club needs a massive rebuild. You know, we need 40 players.
Huge.
It's humongous. Like Rooney said, he needed about 40, 50 players. But you look at Sunderland, you know, Premier League side, went down to into League One. How long have they been there now? Three, 4 years? Longer than that?
Longer than that, isn't it? I think. But again, it comes down to accounting. It comes down to common sense running the football club.
Yeah.
Not having a board is ludicrous.
Yeah.
Having two people run a football club is ludicrous. Mm. You need a director of football. You need a scouting team who knows the structure of League One and League Two and non-league, who knows the lower leagues in France, in Germany. You know, this is where the money should be spent.
Yeah, yeah.
Get these professionals in. Wayne is a phenomenal leader. He's not the best coach. He admits that.
Yeah,
Liam McCormick is a fantastic coach. He's got a good background got a good backroom staff with Justin and Jason, and there's some great coaches in the football club. But what's missing is the middle piece.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the understanding of budget, wheeling and dealing. And if it means sacrificing some of these young stars now who may not be ready for League One, let's be honest. You know, you look at some of these wonderful young players we've got now. Are they going to perform the same on a Tuesday night at Fleetwood in February?
Yeah.
Are they?
Exactly. It's.
Can you remember when we went to play Accrington in the FA Cup?
Well, and we had some. You know, we had a pretty decent squad we put out there as well, and they struggled.
Well, who got injured in that game because he couldn't cope with the physicality? Mason Mount. And this is what I keep saying to people: if you want to know what League One is like, realistically. Let's not think about July, August, September. Let's think about January, February, November, when you're away at Fleetwood and Forest Green and Bristol Rovers and Joey Barton screaming a load of F words. These pitches aren't going to be carpets.
No.
So you're going to need an understanding of what it takes to win on pitches like that. Mm. And our wonderful football, and we do play good football, ain't going to cut the mustard.
No.
And that's where The league is won or lost. And this is why Luton have been so successful, going back down to them again. Nathan Jones.
That's why Rotherham keep going up and down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they haven't, you know, Rotherham are obviously on a budget where they can never quite sustain a championship charge. Luton, again, have somehow managed to do it.
Yeah.
With a capacity of the same as Rotherham's, around 10,000. Mm. With a wonderful leader, Nathan Jones. Went to Stoke, couldn't hack it.
Yeah.
Why? Because he just, I always felt he never had the passion.
No.
You look at Eddie Howe, he went to Burnley. Mm. Never hacked it. He never had the passion. He was always a Bournemouth man. Don't get me wrong, he's doing great in Newcastle. I think Rooney's got that. He's earned that right now. So that place needs to stay. Mm. But they need to build this team of, what are the same 40 players, including the academy?
40 needs to be first. Mm.
Yeah. And to me, keep a couple of the youngsters, don't get me wrong, but yeah, I asked you a question, and I like Max. I know his dad from basketball days. You know, God rest his soul, wonderful man. If someone offered you $8 million for Max Bird, would you sell him?
Yeah, in a heartbeat.
Would you begrudge Max having a chance to play it? Chelsea were sniffing at him last year on the Frank.
No, no. It's like Dylan Williams. It's not Dylan Williams. Yeah, yeah. Was it when they went to Chelsea? Went to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rooney saw the opportunities there. Go them, and you can't begrudge him. And you know Rooney knows that. As much as I think he'd like to keep these players, he knows he cannot stop them playing football for a bigger or a higher league club than where we're at the moment.
No, and ultimately, if you sell Bielik, Bird, and Knight, and people are going to listen to this podcast and go, Chris, you're talking absolute. I need to swore then. Realistically, to build a competitive League One squad, you're looking at probably £10 million.
Yeah.
Well, you can easily sustain that squad and its salary with, unfortunately, the sacrifice of three current players.
Yeah.
But we're talking about business now. We're talking about sustainability. Mm. £10 million plus in the right director of football's hands and the right scouting hands will get you a very, very good squad.
Would you say that Paul Stratford is that right man? Because that's what we're hearing. Gary Cook would be the CEO, Paul Stratford would be a director of football.
If he's got experience in that at that level, he's obviously got the contacts with Wayne, there's no question. Do those contacts go, again, it comes back down to, are his contacts going for youth again in the Premiership? Mm. But remember, you go back down to the argument we had earlier, they're going to some really damning places to play football in the middle of winter.
You look at Chorley.
We put
the kids out against Chorley and they could not hack it. You know, I get, obviously, there's a lot of young lads, 16, 17-year-olds in there, but, you know, that was Chorley, a non-league side. And, you know, you might play for Derby County Academy, but you cannot play non-league football because you got, you know, it's the physical aspect of it. It's a heck of a lot more physical in the lower league than it is in the Championship and in the Premiership.
Well, this comes back down to Simon again. You know, this whole issue where we're at now goes back to after the playoffs.
Yeah.
And Gary Rowett was told, you haven't got the budget. You've got to cut it. All of a sudden, Frank Lampard is spending in excess of, they believe, with loan deals and wages, £50 million.
Yeah.
Did it get us promotion?
No.
No.
Just on that, I had this conversation actually with a friend of mine the other day. We obviously spent that money. Well, we bought in Lampard and we spent that money with Frank Lampard, sold stadium, etc. We failed promotion. Now, Mel was then going to offer him a new contract. Was he just going to chuck money again and do the same again?
Yeah, of course he was. Because let's look at the facts. Who was on the EFL board at the time?
Pierce, wasn't it? Was it Stephen Pierce?
Yeah. So clearly at the time, that pile under the carpet, which was being swept and swept and swept, was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. Because this accounting goes back a long time, doesn't it?
It was 2015, wasn't it?
I think. And I think Mr. Pierce came off the board in 2020, 2021. I can't remember exactly when it was.
Yeah.
When things started to be quite obviously wrong. Mm. There's just been more bad management, full stop.
Yeah.
Like you said, go back to 2015. When we failed in the playoffs, and I always say this, the playoff final, the one incident that happened in that playoff final that changed the game was the deliberate foul on Johnny Russell going clean through.
Yeah.
By, was it Matt O'Neill, wasn't it?
No, Matthew Upson.
Was it? Oh, okay. No, sorry.
Matthew Upson was Brighton. He's the one.
Yeah. I'm sure it was O'Neill.
Yeah, it was.
Former Portsmouth guy. That was genius by an experienced head. Because Derby were all over them at the time. And it's clean through. Well, anyway, we lost that final. 2015, who was responsible for bringing in players? I can't remember if it was Joe McLaren or whoever. What was the structure of the board? Who was discussing? That team was one or two players short of being a title-winning team. We missed out every year because of certain injuries. Chrissy Martin got injured at Bournemouth in his absolute prime, didn't he? We lost him for 10 or 12 games.
Yeah.
Darren Bent came in. We were top of the league at the time. And you just think about it. Structurally, all these teams have been successful. And unfortunately, I have to mention Leeds. They've been so close. So every time we got closer, Bielsa just tweaked a little bit more. Brought in one or two players. Got rid of players that didn't quite fit. Like the lad at the back, went to Brentford. Janssen. Everyone was absolutely crazy, saying, why is he... But gets rid of him, they get automatic promotion. There was just bad management throughout the football club in 2015, 2016, 2017.
Yeah.
Gary Rowett nearly got it right when he put together a squad of, let's be honest, a patchwork squad with the odd dream boat. But ultimately... It's fallen apart since 2014. It's got decidedly worse. Then we had the final gamble in 2019, which we all know the history of that. And now we're in deep doo-doo.
Yeah.
And it all comes back down to two people.
Mm.
Nothing to do with management. It comes down with accounting and management of a football club because they believe that they knew better.
Yeah.
And I think if we're going to go forward, whoever takes over this football club needs to put their money in that position, in the position of director of football, the scouting, the whole process that puts together a team. Because there's going to be 300 or 400 players out of contract come July. And you could put together a team.
Yeah.
Chrissy Martin, for instance, he's out of contract.
No, he's not. He signed the new deal.
Has he signed the deal? Has he?
Bless I looked. The dream is still alive.
You look at Cameron Jerome, going back to him, he's rejuvenated at Luton.
Yeah, because he looked poor in pre-season under Frank Lampard. After he had that, obviously he had a great back end of the season under Gary Rowett. He looked poor pre-season under Lampard, but he went up to way to Galatasaray. I thought that was it. His career's over after that, but not Galatasaray. Another Turkish team. Can't remember it was now, but I know he went to Turkey. And he's come back. And like you say, Luton, he's showing that experience, and that's something that we've missed. This is someone, when Colin Kazim-Richards was injured, that's it. You lose that experience up front. We struggle to score goals, and that ultimately is what's cost us this season. Or well, not say cost us, the 20-point points deduction has cost us, but let's think. I think we finished, 6 points, was it? Or 7 points from safety, which, all being said, it's not that bad. And I think there is a few games we can look back on and go, could have won that, should have won that. That's to me, if we'd had a striker that was banging in, 15 goals a season, we may have stayed up, but...
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't blame any playing staff or any coaching staff whatsoever. I blame the hierarchy.
Yeah.
Full stop. A football club is not ran by two people.
No.
And, again, I could be shot for this podcast. I don't know. I don't really care. It's reality.
Mm.
I've been in professional sport with basketball. When we put together the Derby Storm in 1997, we were called the Dog Pound. We signed a coach called Bob Donewald Jr., who was the most craziest, wildest coach you've ever met. He was off his rocker, completely mental. But he was a wonderful coach.
Yeah.
And he signed the most bizarre team of old heads and young heads you've ever seen. Guys who were pretty much banned from playing everywhere in the world other than England for various reasons. But he put together experience within that realm. And they were a wonderful side. And we were on a budget of 150 grand for the salary for that year, which was the lowest in the league.
Yeah.
But we put a guy in charge of that budget who knew what he was doing, which was Bob. Now, you put together a budget of 10 million pounds, should we say, to a director of football who's been there, seen it, done it, and in my opinion, should be at the playoff finals for League Two and League One.
Yeah.
Now, ready, booking a seat at Wembley. Mm. We should have a scout there. We should be looking at the Port Vales, the Mansfields. We should be looking at the MK Dons. I won't say that other team that end in Wanderers. But this is where good management and good structure comes from.
Yeah.
The name Derby County will attract a lot of people to play. Wayne Rooney, add that on top.
Yeah, yeah.
Young potential to have a chance, add that on top. Great coaches like Liam Messina, Curtis Davis to lead, Richard Stearman to lead, add that into the equation.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring in 6 or 7 old heads. You need a John Eustace style player.
Yeah, yeah.
John was the catalyst to that team when we were so close. Mm. Not Will Hughes, John Eustace. Because without John Eustace, Will Hughes couldn't do his magic.
Yeah, yeah.
Full stop. And people forget that. People remember going back to when we got promotion to Igor Stimac. Who was his partner in crime at the back who allowed Stimac to play those kind of balls and run that gap between the midfield and the back four?
Dean Yates.
One of my favourite players of all time. That guy was an unsung hero, and it really pisses me off, pardon my French, everyone, that Dean isn't recognised as what he did in that year. But without him, who was an experienced head, who had dodgy knees, who was like a Paul McGrath, couldn't train anywhere near to the potential, you know. But Jim Smith bought him because he knew of his background. He knew his experience.
Yeah.
And that's because Jim Smith and his team knew what it took.
Mm.
Brought Gary Rowett in from Everton, who never played a first team game for Everton, made his name in the lower leagues at Cambridge.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, things like this. And this is where Derby County, Chris Kirshner, please, if you're listening, if you take over this football club, do not spend your money. If you've got a pot of money to spend on this team, spend it on the facility of bringing the team together.
Yeah.
That is the most important structure you'll ever put in this football club.
I think that's a brilliant way to end it.
Sorry, I've been waffling all night. Sorry,
buddy. That's fine, mate. That's fine. No, that's brilliant. Yeah. And that's, I guess, what it boils down to. It's running the club right, something that's not been done for years. And I think if we can do that, then, you know, we can, this club can be rebuilt. You know, that's all there is to it. The fans are always going to be there. You know, no matter what league we're in, the fans will be there. You know, and like you said, if we get it done right, you know, this club will be back and stronger and better than ever, I reckon. So, yeah. No, anyway, Chris, it's been absolutely brilliant to chat to you. I'm sure we'll definitely do it again.
I hope so, mate. It's ultimately, I've spoken from the heart, and if I've upset anyone within the football club, I hope not. I've only told the truth of what I see and what I believe. We will rise again. Fingers crossed that this is resolved sooner rather than later. And like I said, if Chris Kirsch listens to this or ever, you know, by all means, contact me and you. And hopefully I'll be on the show again with better news.
Brilliant. Anyway, guys, that's the show. And thank you for listening. Thank you again, Chris, for coming on. And I guess now I shall see you next season, unless there's any breaking news that comes through or I get a certain Chris Kirsch on the podcast, which would be nice. So, anyway, guys, thank you so much. And as always, come on, Derby.